It is good to see each and every one this morning, as always. It's great to have an opportunity to be able to come together and offer our worship and our praise together to God. My voice is about back this week, still struggling with it somewhat, so hopefully I can still be heard. If you will, please be turning to Proverbs chapter 4. And eventually we're going to use the entirety of that chapter for our text this morning, looking at a lesson entitled, What Every Child Needs to Know. All of us will agree as to the importance of educating our children. Whether we send them to public school or private school or we homeschool them, we do so to help provide them for what they're going to need in life as far as their education. We emphasize the need for them to do their homework. We're concerned when we see poor grades or notes from teachers regarding attitude or aptitude. Even as our kids struggle with their education, we encourage them to work through it, knowing the importance of the subjects as they pertain to their later life. However, I know of parents who are very concerned about the secular education of their children, but fail to understand the importance of their religious education as well. As we raise our children, there are several things that they need to know. They need to know, first and foremost, that we love them. They need to know that they can trust us when they're in trouble. They need to know that we expect them to do their best in any given endeavor. And on we can go. However, they also need to know some things about God, His Word, and what those mean to them. So first of all this morning, let's look and see that every child needs to know that he has parents who love him. Every child has certain needs, and for each child, those needs change. At least the emphasis maybe upon those needs change. And God has arranged to have those needs met. We don't really have any cookie-cutter children. We've had three, still have three. And they're all three different. They were all three struggles to motivate to some area, to some extent. You might try one thing on one kid, or you might try to teach them one way. That worked very well, but didn't work at all for the other one. And so you had to learn to adapt what you were doing to the personality, to the character of the child, to get the points across that we did. They're all different, with different personalities. And so adjusting our approach, though staying with the same principles, was needed. Every child needs a mother and father. At the outset, let me express my appreciation for those who are trying to do what is right, even when they don't have a spouse who is trying to do the same thing. It makes the work that much tougher. It doesn't relieve the need to do the work. It doesn't lessen the importance of the need to train and educate. But it's tougher when it's only one-sided. The point here is that God has an ideal in mind for the family. Anybody who has raised children, and I'm looking at a lot of gray heads that have already raised their kids, you know that that's a difficult task at best. There are times when we wanted to pull what's left of our hair out in dealing with our kids. There's times that they moved us to tears, and there's times when those tears were of laughter regarding some of the things that were done. But raising children in this day and age is a very difficult task at best. It's that much more difficult if God's ideal is not being practiced. We talked about that a little bit in our Bible class this morning, looking at the first four verses of Ephesians chapter 6. Basically, though, what Solomon is saying in our text, and we'll get to that text beginning with our next point, Solomon is basically saying, because I was loved, my parents taught me. His parents realized that he needed to know certain things and that it was their God-given responsibility to supply him the knowledge of those things. It's been said that the most natural place in which to teach is the home. But the most powerful place to teach is a home where love abounds. Now remember what love is. Love is desiring the best for the object loved. At times, this can be done with a hug. But at other times, it's done with whatever form of discipline that the parents choose to use. Both are done out of love. Must be done out of love. But now let's dig a little bit more deeply into our text for more things that a child needs to know. Every child needs to know the importance of listening to their parents. Look at verses 1 through 4, verses 10 and 11, and verses 20 through 22. I'll remind you of those as we go down through. Proverbs 4, 1 through 4. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words. Keep my commands and live. Now look at verses 10 and 11. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in the right paths. Now verses 20 through 22. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Here in our text, Solomon is pleading for receptive hearts. He recognizes the importance of the parents teaching their children, but he's also seen the other side of that. For parents to effectively teach their children have to receive that instruction. At Brown Trail, I often teach my students that words have meaning. And I try to encourage them often to look through and pick out the main words in a verse to see really what's being stressed in these passages. But I want you to notice some of the words that Solomon used in these sections of verses in Proverbs 4 as he stressed the importance of listening. He says, hear the instruction. He said, give attention to no understanding. He said, receive my sayings. He said, incline your ear to my sayings. What he was doing was asking for a basic attitude of the heart. Hearts that will pay attention, receive what is offered, appreciate those lessons, retain them, and then to be obedient is what Solomon was calling for. Solomon not only tells the children to listen, but why they should listen. One of those reasons is found in verse 5, because the things he is telling them come from God. It's not just some random teaching. Listen to what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is what God wants you to hear. In other words, Solomon was indicating that God gives this wisdom. He had done so back in Proverbs 2 and verse 6. Then he wrote that they should listen because of his own experience, the things that he experienced in life as it relates to these things. In other words, Solomon had lived what he was teaching his children. You know, as parents, we've all made a lot of mistakes. And it's healthy for us to admit those mistakes. Not dwell on them, that's not what I'm saying. Not beat yourself up over mistakes, but recognize that we've made mistakes. But part of the reason for doing so is because as we teach our children, we don't want them to repeat the mistakes that we made. And so what are we going to do? We're going to look back on our experience. And we're going to share that experience with them as we teach and nurture and admonish them. Solomon is basically saying, I know what I'm talking about. I've experienced that. If we use the phrase that so many use today, we can say, been there, done that. Solomon is saying, I have had experiences you have not had. Please listen to what I'm saying. He also told them that he knows what's best for them. Why? Largely because he experienced it. And because he had been given that instruction as well. There's a powerful lesson for us to learn here. Solomon's children did not automatically listen. I don't want to burst your bubble, but you who are going to have children one day are going to learn your children don't automatically listen. That's something that's taught. It's a learned behavior. Respect and receptivity are both learned behaviors, but you had to be worthy of that respect. And you had to provide something worthwhile to be received to complete the picture. Thirdly, every child needs to know about the knowledge of God and a proper relationship with Him, and that those things are vital. Look at verses 5 through 9. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. Solomon is one of the greatest biblical examples that we have of wisdom. All what it must have been like growing up in Solomon's house when he finally got it. When you look toward the book of Ecclesiastes, and when he said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. As a matter of fact, be looking at Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14. Certain biblical characters, we think about certain words that we associate with them. And Solomon, we generally associate with wisdom. Ecclesiastes 12, 13 and 14. He said, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Also look at 2 Chronicles chapter 1 and verses 7 through 12. On that night, God appeared to Solomon and said to him, ask, what shall I give you? And Solomon said to God, you have shown great mercy to David my father and have made me king in his place. Now, O Lord God, let your promise to David my father be established. For you have made me king over a people like the dust of the earth in multitude. Now give me wisdom and knowledge that I may go out and come in before this people. For who can judge this great people of yours? Then God said to Solomon, because this was in your heart, and you have not asked riches or wealth or honor or the life of your enemies, nor have you asked long life, but have asked wisdom and knowledge for yourself that you may judge my people over whom I made you king. Wisdom and knowledge are granted to you. And I will give you riches and wealth and honor such as none of the kings have had who are before you, nor shall any after you have the like. Again, we know that Solomon is known for his wisdom. Here we have one way that he knew how to do so. He knew about wisdom because he had been taught by his father. Imagine yourself in Solomon's place. You're going to be placed as king. You're going to be placed as king over God's people. And God has basically written you a blank check. Ask, and I'll give it to you. Notice the things more along a worldly line that he could have asked for. And God referred to those things. Riches and wealth and honor and prestige and victory over your enemies. But Solomon said, no, you place me in the position of judging over your people. Give me wisdom that I can guide them in the way that you would have them to be guided. What a powerful example of priority. It's also important for us to know just what this wisdom is. Because the world has an entirely different idea of what passes for wisdom. Just listen to the news every once in a while and listen to what some people are advocating as being the way we need to go. We're talking about that which is good and right as revealed by God. In other words, this wisdom is that which sees things as God sees them. Therefore, we look to the source which tells us how God sees things. Where is our source of wisdom today? It's from the Scriptures. because that's where He has revealed His will to us. It's good that we're concerned about the secular education of our children. However, there is something more important and truly eternal in nature. Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, Jesus said in that well-known passage, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Isn't that what Solomon did? He asked for wisdom, and then all those other things he might have asked for were added because he showed what the true priority was. He did get the wealth. He did get the honor. He built a temple that was second to none. We sat down in class one day and just began looking at the weights and measures given regarding the gold and silver and all that in the temple, using today's standard, monetary standard, and we're talking about the billions of dollars of just the ornaments in the temple. And that didn't scratch the surface of the wealth of Solomon. This determination, putting God first, will come through an intensive study of God's will. May we be those who are more concerned about the spiritual than we are the secular. Notice I didn't say let's not be concerned about the secular. We have to prepare our children to live in a secular world. We have to give them certain tools to thrive, to work, to exist in society. But may we also see the importance of the spiritual, as it will put those things into proper perspective. This intensive study will be followed by heartfelt obedience to what we've learned. Look at James chapter 4, verses 7 through 8. "Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Look back to our text, verses 5 through 9, and notice the illustration that Solomon used to stress his point in our text. He compared seeking God's will with seeking a woman that is greatly to be desired. He said, "Do not forsake her, love her, exalt her." As a young person should seek the best possible mate and cleave to them, we are to seek for God and to cling to the relationship that we have with Him. I look around at these little kids and I love seeing them. I love seeing the smile on their faces. I love seeing the energy. I never get tired of those precious, sweet hugs. But these kids are going to grow up one of these days. And one of these days, these little boys are going to start getting in their eyes that girl. And these girls are going to start paying attention to these boys one of these days. And the fun begins. As our children get a little older, they have no problem thinking about boys or girls. But notice what Solomon tells them, that they should spend that much time and more seeking the will of God. Balance our approach. Balance our thinking. Realize what's truly important. In short, we as parents have to teach our children about priorities. By our teaching or lack of the same, we cannot present them a message that other things are more important than God and His will. There are many things that will compete for their time and ours as well. We must guide them toward those things that are more important because of the eternal nature of them. And then lastly this morning, every child needs to know the necessity of choosing the right path. Look at verses 10 through 19 of our text. "Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil. And their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. This final piece of instruction is tied directly to what we've already considered regarding the spiritual impact of the instruction of our children. After saying that his children should hear him, Solomon then states why. Hear me, I have led you to the right paths. We regularly speak of two ways regarding spiritual matters. The right way is the way that is acceptable to God and based on His will. The wrong way covers everything else, no matter what it may be. Personal preference, the majority, the minority. You can go on and on with those things. Notice the clear, simple words of Christ in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Today the world has lost the concept of right and wrong. Men seldom think today in terms of black and white. They want to think along the lines of things being gray and those gray areas. It's really much more simple than that. It's important for our young people to recognize that there are things that are right and things that are wrong, and there is a biblical basis for determining which is which. They need to know that it is imperative that they choose the way that is right. Notice again, to encourage his listeners to choose the right way, Solomon draws a contrast, a sharp contrast, between the two different paths. The path that is the right way is the way of true freedom, according to Solomon. The right path is straight and level, and you can travel on that way with speed and safety, verse 12. This is in contrast with the evil pathway that twists up and down and twists from side to side and is slow going, difficult to travel. It will surprise many young people to hear the right path, the straight path, the narrow path equated with freedom. The world has attempted to teach them that parents, authority figures, who make them believe are shackling them and are limiting them, chaining them up so they don't have any freedom. That's the way the world thinks. Many see only the narrow of which Jesus spoke. Yet if they will open their eyes and their minds, they will see that the boundaries that have been placed there have been placed for our protection and for our safety. It provides the greatest sense of safety and security. The path of the wicked, he says, is characterized by bondage. Verses 16 and 17. And again, many see a paradox here. The evil path provides bondage because of the nature of sin. Doing wrong becomes like a drug. The addict cannot rest until he gets his next fix. The young person who does not turn from the wrong path is going to be controlled by that sin and by its pleasures. Look at Romans 6, verses 16 and 17. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. Notice under sin, they're seen as slaves, as bound, as in bondage. But in their conversion, they've been seen as freed. Freed from what? Freed from sin and what it does. He goes on to say in verse 13 of our text that the right path is the way of right, is the way of life. Excuse me. Choosing the right path is not just a good thing to do. It's a matter of life or death. One must put forth every effort to hold fast to what's right. Notice the words of Paul in 1 Thessalonians 5, 21, 22. Very simple formula. Test all things, hold fast what is good, abstain from every form of evil. The wrong path, according to verses 17 to 19 of our text, is the way of destruction. Again, we're speaking of eternal consequences, as well as those associated with a sinful lifestyle. Listen to the news every Sunday morning trying to get ready. And almost every week there's a killing somewhere. Something happened in a nightclub. Somebody got behind the wheel of a car drunk and killed somebody else. Over and over and over again, we're seeing what results in poor choices that people make. The difficulty that we have as parents is knowing that our teaching our children the way that they should go is going to put them on a path that's a different path than their peers are taking. And we're asking our kids to do something that is difficult. This makes this an uncomfortable situation in which we may have to take a stand that's not popular with our kids. However, as it is with God, they do not have to like what we say. But at least in my house, while they were in my home, they had to do what I said. As we close, as with so many situations, this is a situation of the heart. And as we conclude, let's look at verses 20 through 27 of our text. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your feet from evil. When it's talking about the heart here, it's not talking about that blood pump that we're all so concerned about. This is talking about the center of the intellect. Getting our mind right will aid us in giving everything else right. We are to keep our heart, indicating that this is a reference to persistence and to diligence. Simply put, brethren, we must train our children to think right. You know, one of these days they are going to leave our homes. They're going to be counted upon to make their own decisions. And we can't make all those decisions for them. We can't be everywhere. As much as we might like it, down the road, seeing them headed in a direction, we can't make all those decisions for them. We're preparing them for the day when they can make those decisions for themselves. That means providing them those tools. Showing them the right way, living the right way as an example for them to look back on as they deal with those situations. Because to an extent, they're to think for themselves. To do so, they must use what's been provided. But for any change to be lasting, it has to be a decision they make. Oh yes, a child can act a certain way in our house to keep us happy. But they can be doing so just to keep us happy. For it to be a lasting change, for it to be something that's going to direct their life, it has to be something they have to choose to do for themselves. As we close, as parents, we have been entrusted with the well-being of our kids. In a sense, it's about stewardship. God has given these children to us, and we're going to be held accountable for what we do with them and how we train them. Yes, they will make their own spiritual decisions, but it's going to be based on what they've been taught and the tools they've been given. We don't know the hearts or the minds of anyone here this morning. It may be this morning that you have not made the ultimate decision.